Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is prime time on Money FM 89.3. Now, predicting the future of work is hard when you're still in the midst of the catastrophe. It's clear, though, that futuristic trends are emerging, having been catalyzed by the COVID-19 pandemic. The big question is to what degree they'll survive the crisis. Although the technology to facilitate remote work's been around for over a decade, COVID-19 has forced hundreds of millions of employers and employees worldwide to engage in a sudden massive real-time experiment with remote work arrangements. To what extent is the pandemic-induced regime of remote work, flexible hours, and AI-enabled software here to stay? We find out from Dan Schaubel, managing partner of Workplace Intelligence, workplace researcher, and also a New York Times bestseller, his book, Back to Human. Dan, thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
So let's talk through some of the issues that's been brought to light.
Absolutely. I mean, COVID has accelerated, amplified, and prioritized a lot of the big workplace trends that have been going on for many years. We could have worked remote 10, maybe even 15, 20 years ago, but now it's forced companies to have more flexible work policies out of necessity for people's safety and security, which is a huge priority to job seekers, employees when thinking about what company to stay with or work for in the first place. And so between remote work and the rise of remote work, especially for knowledge workers, as well as virtual learning. Now, you know, distance learning has become paramount, and employees, even though they're not in physical office spaces, expect colleges to almost be like the new universities to get ahead in the workplace and know what they need when they need it.
So it sounds like these futuristic trends that are emerging have been catalyzed by the pandemic.
The best example of this is if you think about the CEO's agenda from the beginning of the pandemic or just right before to now, talent management was at the bottom, actually. And now it's at the top, number one priority, because it's about how do we retain employees, especially competing for global talent now that the workplace is so decentralized, meaning that you could work from anywhere and do work. Unless you're in a factory or in a grocery store or something that requires you to be on site, like if you're a doctor or a nurse. Mm. And so now the global talent pool is fully realized. It's not like we didn't have this in the past, but now with so many people relocating, now it's apparent that, hey, a company could hire somebody from wherever they want for a knowledge worker type position. And at the same time, now someone who lives in Singapore or you know, a random state like Idaho or Utah in the United States doesn't have to relocate to California to work for Google. Now you can have these jobs that you'd normally have to relocate for anywhere. And so the talent pool is so much wider, which is great in terms of opportunity for individuals, but it's more competitive because if you're in Singapore and you're competing for a job in Google in Mountain View, you're up against way more people than you were before, but you have a chance, which you didn't have before.
Let's talk about the workplace safety that's come to the fore, obviously, because of what's happened. But trust needs to be both ways. So much as I, as an employee, need to trust that my company's doing something about this. How then, if we talk about work, a company can trust you to get your job done when they can't see you?
Trust is the biggest word right now. And I knew this because at the beginning of the pandemic, biggest CEOs in the world, conversations really focused on trust. And there's a lot of inputs that go into trust. How often are you communicating? Are you being honest with your, you know, workers? The necessary safety protocols in your office spaces, what does that look like? And so you can communicate trust by doing the right things, by communicating what you're doing and being a lifeline for workers. And a lot of this trust had to have been built before the pandemic to fully leverage it during the pandemic. So for instance, the best example, I interviewed the CEO of Whole Foods, and he said that Whole Foods had built up so much trust with employees and customers pre-pandemic. And now with remote workers, they're basically cashing in on all that trust. And now it's almost being taken out of the bank because people trust remote workers less, even though remote workers are more productive. You start to, you know, chip away at trust when you have a remote workplace because trust is built more in person than it is built remote. The stigma around mental health, though, and the stigma around remote work are fading. So that's one of the good things about this is everyone's sort of suffering at some level, which means everyone is more relatable. And remote work has been destigmatized because it used to be like, if you work remote, you were viewed as lazy at home, sitting on a couch, drinking a beer, watching, you know, a Netflix series. Right now, there is no study that shows that remote workers are less productive. But how remote work connects to mental health is that people are working more hours during the pandemic. We've exchanged our time spent commuting for more time working. In the Oracle study, we found that people are working upwards of 5 or even 10 more hours than they were before because of this exchange. And thus, that's led to the burnout. So the side effect to working remote is a bigger mental health crisis.
We're speaking with Dan Schwabel, who is managing partner of Workplace Intelligence, also the New York Times bestselling author of Back to Human. Anecdotally, at the risk of generalizing, here in Asia, some of my friends have been telling me that their bosses want them back in the office as soon as possible. So there's still that stigma, as you talked about, surrounding remote working means I don't have eyes on you. I don't know what you're doing. You're not doing anything, period.
We know this is true. We know that there's a lack of trust. So in a UKG study of over about 3,000 workers worldwide, we found that remote workers are trusted less than office workers, even though they're more productive. This is a big thing because if you're not seen and heard, there is less trust. But I think that's even going to be destigmatized moving forward as more and more executives aren't in physical spaces. But it's not going to be all or nothing. There's not one size fits all when it comes to these trends. One of the bigger things is that we're all becoming more connected through technology, meaning that where you're living doesn't make as much of a deal. Of course, there's cultural norms, whereas, you know, in Singapore, $1 million deal, FaceTime is pretty much required. Mm. Like there has to be a lot more effort into investing in people in order to make waves and innovate and close deals in Singapore. It'll be fascinating to see in the years to come how Singapore changes during this period where so many people are working remote and if that will change at all. The pandemic, if it were to last many years, maybe there would be cultural change, but even if it's just until mid next year or so, then maybe not. But overall, it's going to be hard to make the case for a worker that they have to be in a physical office space for 5 days a week after this global remote work experiment was successful.
Also, Dan, let's talk about, say, how organizations can then continue to foster a socially connected workforce, which you talk about in your book, because one of the collateral damage, so to speak, of the pandemic is this connectedness that we feel with one another, or the lack of face-to-face time, if you will. Video calls just don't cut it, right?
They don't cut it. In fact, if you've participated in a lot of Zoom calls early on, it was exciting and exhilarating, and now people are starting to get sick of it. So negative feelings and connotations are associated with Zoom, unlike it was in March and April. And I think that the Zoom fatigue has affected people's mental health again. And, you know, I know people and my peers who are on like 7 or 8 Zoom calls a day. And I think that's too much. I think there is room for just phone calls and regular means of communication. A lot of leaders are making bold statements right now. We're going to be remote only in the future. We're going to be force people back into the physical office space when it's safe. You know, again, it's not one size fits all. Think of it as heading into the future. It's the hybrid workplace and workforce. That's where we're heading, meaning that forcing someone to come to the office 5 days a week, not going to happen. Having them come in a few days, but work from home a few days, depending on their life circumstances. You have kids, you don't have kids. You know, everyone has all these circumstances, nature of your job. And so because everyone's in these different situations, somebody could be an introvert versus an extrovert. An extrovert would want to have more time in a physical office space, where as an introvert like me, I've been working from home for over 10 years. So there's all these discrepancies. But you win both ways, meaning that with remote work, you get to have a more flexible schedule, a little bit more independence. But with office work, you get more of the socialization, and then that breeds creativity and innovation. I think the hybrid workforce is going to be the overarching model that works because it's not one size fits all. You can get the best of both worlds with a hybrid approach.
Have you seen, though, Dan, in your research and observations that organizations recognize this?
Yeah, the two companies that come to mind immediately is Nationwide Insurance and REI. So they have gotten rid of their headquarters and now they have offices, but they're decentralized. So in a sense, this co-working model where, you know, offices are decentralized, where, you know, there's a, for instance, a WeWork and, you know, all over the world, that is going to be the model that prevails rather than you go into an office and with like 50,000 people. But at the same time that I say that, it's debatable how this is all going to play out because we've seen the cost of real estate leases go down so much during the pandemic. So you're seeing all the tech companies, you know, sign these leases in major cities. So that kind of size might be different because of it, because young people will always want to work in cities because work is an extension of college for a lot of young people. But more decentralization, so more offices, more spread, because the workforce is already spread. So they need to take advantage of that.
What else might we see moving forward into 2021 by way of workplace trends, Dan? So this pandemic-induced regime of remote work, flexible hours, AI-enabled software here to stay?
Absolutely. So between March and April, EY did a study that found over 40% of companies are investing more in automated technologies. The technology that, you know, was towards the bottom of the priority list has worked its way up, right? Because the cost of labor increased and thus companies started investing more in technology to keep up to speed and innovate during this time and to be able to function. Like what people don't understand is technology has created a global safety net. If we didn't have technology, if we weren't able to collaborate, the unemployment rate would be astronomically high. Like, you know, of course we went through a recession, but in the United States, at least, it'd be so much worse if we didn't have this, if we weren't able to work from home. Because we can't go to the office, we can still work. And so that's really been a game changer. And I think a lot of companies have realized that. And technology in many ways has created a better experience than we could have even imagined a few years ago. COVID has forced these changes, including an investment in technology. Technology has enabled work culture to scale, but at the cost of space. Being in a physical space conveys a brand and a culture in a way that other things can't. To strip that, it does strip away culture a little bit. And what you will see is a lot of companies, you know, during a time when they had a lot of people work remote, they got a new CEO. And part of, you know, what they were trying to do is lay off a lot of workers. And now you're going to see a lot of companies that need to lay off workers, bring workers back as an excuse to get rid of them. There's no question that's going to happen. But I think it's very risky right now because while they might be able to pitch it so it's a positive thing, I do think that talent will go somewhere else. Because again, the hybrid workforce means that people want some degree of flexibility, regardless of the nature of their job. And if companies aren't providing it, and if they're promoting that you can't work remote, there's going to be a huge backlash and it will hurt them from a talent standpoint for years to come. So unlike the past where a handful of companies were able to bring people back for command and control. And we know that remote workers are not trusted because if you look at the rise of remote work, it's coincided with the investment in monitoring technology. So everyone's being monitored way more and you won't, the reason why you monitor people is because there's a lack
of trust. Yep.
Exactly. Yep. So I think that it's going to be harder to bring everyone back again, unlike in previous situations where it was just a few companies, because now the global homework experience has impacted everyone globally. So I think it's going to be harder to do that and there'll be a huge backlash. And I suggest that companies don't do that.
Dan, sounds like we're pretty far from back to human. How hopeful are you?
I think we can use technology to connect in a human way. But I also do think that once things get safer and people are, you know, are vaccinated and feel confident about the work environment, there's going to be a mass exodus away from homes and into planes, trains, cars, everything, right? So if you're in the, you know, my dad's in the travel business, you're not even going to be able to get on a flight once things return to quote unquote normal. And I say quote unquote normal because it'll be a new normal. It won't be what we've seen in the past. And it's not like we won't get a pandemic in the future. Like, you know, we had a recession in the US in 2008 and we had another one, you know, in 2020. And so I think there are going to be cycles and things will come around again. And it will hopefully we'll be better prepared. And a lot of companies didn't have remote work policies. They didn't have a lot of this set up. There was a scramble to figure out what to do with disaster recovery, you know, procedures. They didn't have this, right? They never thought this would ever happen. No one did. It's been the hardest year of a leader's life ever. And that's what we found. And so we'll be better prepared because now people have masks, obviously. There's not going to be a shortage of masks anymore. But it's also the leaders in HR departments have the policies and procedures to follow if something like this would happen again in a way in which they didn't pre-pandemic.
Dan Schwabel, Managing Partner of Workplace Intelligence, also the New York Times bestselling author of Back to Human. Dan, thank you so much for your time and stay safe, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.